But now, here on BBC Radio 3, here's Claire Martin and Jazz Lineup.
Unique sounds of tonight's featured artist, Shetland-born saxophonist Rachel Cohen and her quartet, recorded at the 2015 Glasgow Jazz Festival. More from that performance later on the show. Also on today's programme, I'll be joined by Kevin Legendre for his regular monthly feature, Now's the Time, where he shines the spotlight on a classic album of recent times. This month, he's picked See the Light from 1976 by American keyboardist Eddie Russ. Eddie has played with many of the jazz greats, including singer Sarah Vaughan, saxophonist Stan Getz, and master trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie. Here's a taste of today's featured album showcasing his more funky-based solo work. Eddie Russ, and more from his album See the Light later on. Also coming up, Jazz Lineup reporter Sebastian Scotney goes in search of finding connections between jazz and sport, in particular cricket, and finds some interesting results. That's still to come on the programme. Well, let's get things rolling now with the former Miles Davis guitarist Mike Stern, who you may have heard interviewed fairly recently on Jazz Lineup. He's had a colourful career spanning over several decades, and his album called All Over the Place was a real star-studded affair and featured some serious jazz heavyweights such as trumpeter Randy Brecker, saxophonist Chris Potter and bassist and vocalist Esperanza Spalding. His music mixes up funk, blues, jazz and African music, and the track we're about to hear called Cameroon is named after the West African country which has produced so many legendary bass players, including Etienne Mbappe, Guy Nsangu, Noel Ikwabi, and the one featured on this track, the multi-instrumentalist and vocalist Richard Bona. I'd say this style is a perfect example of world jazz fusion, and it's one of those catchy melodies that stays with you long after you've heard it. Perfect for some late summer sunshine. This is Cameroon. Thank you. from Mike Stern's album All Over the Place. That was Cameroon, featuring the vocals and bass playing of Richard Boner, alongside Bob Franceschini on saxophone, Jim Beard on piano and Hammond B3 organ, Dave Weckl on the drums, Tim Kuiper on percussion, and Mike Stern, of course, wailing on the guitar. The album is out on the Heads Up label. Expelled from music school for inappropriate behaviour and jazz aspirations, Polish violinist and child prodigy Adam Baldych has since gone on to graduate with honours from Berklee College of Music and has evolved to being named as one of the most interesting jazz violinists in Europe. Winning multiple awards along the way, he signed the prestigious German label ACT, and his latest album, called Bridges, was recorded with the Norwegian pianist Helga Lien and his trio. Well, let's hear the gorgeous violin version of Massive Attack's tune Teardrop. It's the only cover on this album. The original song featured the haunting vocals of former Cocktail Twins singer Elizabeth Fraser. But on this instrumental version, it's Adam's violin that takes on the lyrical role, echoing Fraser's vocal lines. This is Teardrop. Thank you. Taken from the album called Bridges, that was Teardrop by Massive Attack, given a new lease of life by violinist Adam Baldick, played there with the Helga Lien Trio. Something now from the acclaimed Danish singer Cecily Norby and Swedish bass player Lars Danielsson, who are both accomplished jazz musicians in their own right and also happen to be husband and wife. They've teamed up for the first time to record their current album called Just the Two of Us. Alongside their own material, the album includes songs by Joni Mitchell, Leonard Cohen, and two songs by the late American jazz singer Abby Lincoln, who was a major influence on Norby. Norby, incidentally, was the first European female artist to be signed to the Blue Note label. Let's hear one of those Abby Lincoln songs now, which really showcases the synergy between the pair and the variety of expressions that they achieve together. This is called And It's Supposed to Be Love by Cecily Norby and Lars Danielsson.
Slam you to the ground, message in the chill. Curses make the head go round, brings a sudden thrill. Send you to another world, mesmerize. Your brain, it's a jewel of a pearl, makes you go insane. And it's supposed to be love.
It's supposed to be love.
Yes, it's supposed to be love.
Supposed to be.
Well, it's supposed to be love. It's all 'cause of love. Say.
taken from the album Just the Two of Us. That was vocalist Cecily Norby and husband Lars Danielsson on bass and marimba on that track called And It's Supposed to Be Love. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, it's time now for our monthly feature where we shine a light on a classic recording of recent times. I'm pleased to be joined by fellow broadcaster and journalist Kevin Legendre for Now's the Time. Kevin, you've unearthed something really funky this month. Tell us a bit more about Eddie Russ and why this album is so important.
Eddie Russ is a keyboard player who's one of those relatively obscure figures in jazz who isn't a big name, but played with big names. Mm. He worked with people like Sarah Vaughan, Dizzy Gillespie, Stan Getz, Benny Golson. So wow. Some really, really top people. And he was never signed to a major label. He just recorded for small independents. And in the mid-70s, he recorded an album called See the Light, which is what we're focusing on, which really is a classic. And I suppose totally sums up, it really encapsulates what became known as jazz funk. So it's fusion of jazz with electric sounds, very funky rhythms, very bluesy, very soulful rhythms, where he's really bringing together the music of the soul giants, Earth, Wind & Fire, jazz giant Herbie Hancock, and the other great jazz organ player and keyboard player as well, Charles Earland.
Brilliant. Sounds like a great combination. Okay, let's hear the first track, and it's Eddie Russ, and the album is called See the Light, and this is the title track. We'll be right back. A funky 7/8 time fill there from Eddie Russ, taken from his album See the Light, and it's our featured recording today. So, Kevin, give me some more information about Eddie Russ. You said he played with Sarah Vaughan and Benny Golson. Do you think it was an easy transition for him from sort of being, I guess, more straight ahead to being a fusion player?
Absolutely, because he was always interested in electric keyboards. In the 60s or early 70s, at least, he started playing Rhodes, and he had a really, really popular track called The Lope Song, which became very big in the 80s when acid jazz happened. That was a sort of rare groove that came back, where he's playing Fender Rhodes. It's very, very funky, very bluesy. So the blues and the funk and the soul was there in his music right from the beginning, and I think he naturally embraced Fender Rhodes, polyphonic synthesizers, all of the Arp Odysseys and Korgs that people like Herbie and other keyboard players were using in the 70s. So the kind of the soul and the blues was always there in his music. It was just a question of incorporating the new sounds.
Mm. I mean, I found this to be sort of quite a real hybrid of different styles.
Absolutely.
It's almost sort of eludes genre definition, doesn't it? The main thing is the dance element. It must have been such a huge
The dance element is really strong. So here's a little bit of nostalgia from me. I first heard this next track that we're going to listen to, Zeus, in the early 80s on a show which was presented by Robbie Vincent.
Do you remember Robbie Vincent?
Yes,
I
do. Was one of the great jazz funk DJs of the day. So to put it in a wider context, you heard Eddie Russ's music alongside people like Willie Bobo, the great Latin percussionist and band leader, Brass Construction, who along with Earth, Wind and Fire were these, you know, great champions of soul music. So it was that really interesting crossover, that meeting point between jazz, soul, which came out of rhythm and blues, and funk, the influence of James Brown as well. Mm. Latin rhythms were thrown in there as well. You put it all together, and as you say, you have something which is very eclectic. Mm.
Also the soundtrack of my youth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dancing at the Cat's Whiskers in Stretton.
Yeah.
The album was recorded in Detroit's United Sound Studios, and that's quite famous for George Clinton concocting his mind-boggling funkadelic
P-funk.
Yeah, so an appropriate place to record, do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think he picked that out on purpose, just for the sort of heritage and feel of the place?
Detroit is one of those really, really key, pivotal cities in the history of black music. Obviously Motown, but also jazz as well, soul, blues, and the whole Clinton Parliament thing as well. So that the heritage of the city, the funkiness of the city, you definitely hear it in this music. So yeah, it makes perfect sense for him to actually be recording in Detroit, even though he was originally from Pittsburgh.
Where do you think he gets his love of Latin and you know, sort of putting a Latin theme in this next tune?
It's that line that you can draw from Dizzy and Chano Pozo to the likes of Earth, Wind and Fire. Mm. Again, we've got to stress the influence of Earth, Wind and Fire, which is really strong. And in fact, the title track is an Earth, Wind and Fire original that he covers. So Earth, Wind and Fire used a lot of Latin and Brazilian rhythms, and that's kind of naturally crossed over into what he's doing.
Okay, let's hear the second track then from See the Light. Eddie Russ is who we're shining a spotlight on, and the track is called Zeus.
Thank you.
That was Eddie Russ with Zayas, taken from his 1976 album See the Light. And I'm talking to Kevin LeGenre about this cult recording for our monthly feature, Now's the Time. So, Kevin, let's talk about the arrangements. We've talked briefly about some of the musicians, and of course, there we heard trumpeter Marcus Belgrave and saxophonist Larry Nozero. But apart from that, session musicians, perhaps?
Mostly.
Reading the charts for the first time?
Yeah, mostly session musicians. Yeah. The guitarist is R.C. Crawford. You got people like Dave Penny and Jerry Pohl on drums and percussion. Marcus Belgrave, the great Marcus Belgrave, the kind of linchpin of the Detroit scene, mm-hmm. played with people like Ray Charles. He's the most well-known person in the group. But for the most part, yeah, people who aren't well-known. But what I love about the tune is the way that he mixes the sound of the Rhodes with the synthesizers. When he takes the solo, he really attacks the Fender Rhodes, and he builds up a lot of energy. And then when he turns to the synthesizer and gets going and starts to really play those long, very, very percussive lines, that just the energy levels in the piece go through the roof, really. If you're dancing to this record as well, and you hear that change in contrast,
you pull out new moves.
Yeah, absolutely. It just it just inspires you. I mean, that was the thing. We used to dance to this record a lot.
It's very layered, isn't it? Jazz funk fusion like this. And it goes on, doesn't it? Lots of tracks are going off.
It was all about colours and people experimenting with technology as well. If you think about that time in the 70s when the use of synthesizers became very important in jazz, and this is the perfect example of that, really. And the most important thing is that this record is, 45 years old, and it was recorded in the mid-70s, and it still sounds, as you said right at the top of the feature, incredibly fresh.
Incredibly fresh. Tell us about the final track, It Made Me Smile. It's so lush and sexy, sultry 70s, isn't it, really?
I mean, it's a very slinky groove. This slinky is Salem good. Avenue, and it's a real contrast to See the Light and Zaya. So this takes the tempo right down. This is a very soulful, kind of gospel-tinged ballad.
You didn't dance to this, though, did you?
I think we may have smooched to this. This is a slow dance classic, a slow jam, a proper slow jam. But the saxophone in this, as well as the female vocal, the very leisurely feel to it, it makes it a really appealing piece of music.
Brilliant. Okay, so the last track from Eddie Russ's album, See the Light. Let's get really mellow with Salem Avenue.
Oh,
Eddie Russ, today's featured artist, and that's from today's featured album, selected by Kevin Legendre, who's still with me. Kevin, that was fantastic. Thank you for bringing that in.
Very happy to share the music.
Well, please stick around, Kevin, for tonight's concert set with saxophonist Rachel Cohen, which was recorded at the 2015 Glasgow Jazz Festival. I know you were there hosting the jazz lineup stage, so it would be great to get some insights about that set from you.
Absolutely. Happy to talk about that.
This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Time now for a report by jazz writer Sebastian Scotney. He's been out and about tracking down some connections between jazz and sport, and cricket in particular. And he finds some interesting results.
Today is the Saturday of the last Ashes Test match. This is a journey to find a few jazz and cricket links, and it starts in perhaps an unlikely place for jazz, which is just behind the pavilion at Lord's in St John's Wood in London, where there's been an anniversary to celebrate this summer. The band that's been playing Dixieland jazz at the Temple of Cricket has been marking its 20th season there. They're called the Outswingers, and they appear during every lunchtime interval of the Test matches at Lord's, on the edge of what is called the Harris Garden. They all play portable acoustic instruments. It's outdoors music, no electrics and no sheet music to deal with. The band was started by saxophonist John Barnes, and these days it's led by tuba player and occasional vocalist Graham Reed. Graham Reed has been in the band all the way through from the start. I went and visited him in Leytonstone. Just an aside, his house happens to be just round the corner from the late, great Canadian trumpeter and composer Kenny Wheeler's house, which now has a plaque on it. And in fact, Graham Reed told me, he used to be occasionally roped in as a copyist for the genius Kenny Wheeler himself. I asked Graham Reed about how the Outswingers band had got started.
Someone in the pavilion one day was talking about putting some live music on, and someone else said, oh, I think John does something like that, rather vaguely. John said, yes, of course I do, I can put something together for you. And that was the initial approach.
One obvious person there who was also a big cricket fan was Campbell Burnett, wasn't he?
Campbell, of course, was a member of the MCC as well. And as you say, an obvious choice for trombone. Spike Robinson, American tenor player, who was a lifelong member of Essex. Surprisingly, for an American to be so keen on cricket, Spike was approached and jumped at the chance, of course. Alan Elston, also very keen on watching the cricket, was a suitable choice for trumpet player. And I've played with John originally, I think, in the Midnight Follies Orchestra. John rang me up and said, look, we've got this job. Do you fancy coming and playing? And of course, as soon as I heard who was in the band, it was an obvious yes. And a free ticket to go and watch some cricket to boot.
John Barnes was always the entertainer. In the early days, according to a book by Jim Godbolt, he used to pin the set lists to the trees and put punning, misleading, groaning cricket allusions there in the titles of standards. So You Go to My Head became You Throw to My Head, Willow Weep for Me became Willow Sweep for Me, and so on. Thank you. That trombonist you can hear on Basin Street Blues is Roy Williams, who took over from Campbell Burnap after that very popular trombonist and broadcaster had died. In fact, the years have really taken their toll on this lineup.
The mantle has fallen on me. John Barnes's wife, Pat, rang me up in the season after he'd had his rather sad stroke, and said that John was keen for the music to continue at Lord's, and that I was the obvious choice to carry on. Would I like to do it? So I said, yes, OK, that's fine.
Ron Drake is on tenor.
Yes, Ron's a lifelong cricket fan, I believe, from Derby, mm-hmm. Derbyshire. Wears his Derby tie to Lord's. And of course, Roy Williams from Yorkshire, who is also a fount of knowledge during the match with statistics about this and that.
We think of cricket as part of our summer, and the Outswingers are a band from here, but to state the obvious, test matches wouldn't happen at all unless there were teams travelling here from far-flung parts of the Commonwealth. Playing at a hotel near the Houses of Parliament, I found a singer and guitar duo. They are both North Londoners, but they have their origins in different cricketing countries, and they both have their associations with the sport too. The singer is Nina Ferro from Melbourne, and the guitarist is Dominic Grant, whose eminent father was born in Guyana. The two work a lot together, and another duo album is on the way. It's music with sunshine in it.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you. You'd feel like heaven to touch. Oh, I want to hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived. And I thank God I'm alive. 'Cause you're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you.
Australians do tend to see the world differently. Surely, I asked Nina Ferro, sport must be so much a part of the backdrop to life. It's hard to avoid, isn't it?
I think it's part of being an Australian, to be honest. Australians are so mad for their sports that most big shows tend to be centred around a big sporting event, and they take it very seriously. And I have been a part of some pretty big sporting events over the past, you know, over the course of my career to date.
Some examples?
Well, the first one that springs to mind was, I think it was 2002, and it was the Boxing Day test between England and Australia. And I got given the national anthem, God Save the Queen. So the other girl got to sing Advance Australia Fair, and I came out and sang God Save the Queen. And what I didn't realise at the time was that it was being beamed live to England. So everyone in England saw it, no one in Australia saw it, except for Hugh Jackman, bless his heart, because he was in the audience. It was incredible walking out onto the MCG, which people who know their sports know that the MCG is one of the larger and one of the best sporting arenas in the world, actually. And so, yes, that was full. I think it was 75,000 people or thereabouts. I think capacity is over 100,000.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you.
The Sydney 2000 Olympics, I had the pleasure of performing at Homebush, where the Athletes Centre was and where all the main people were sort of staying. And there was a stage right outside the Athletes Centre. So for 16 nights straight through the Olympics, I performed every night with a band. And we had an amazing time. We met so many incredible people. Sydney was just a buzz. I saw that again here in London in 2012, but being more a part of the Sydney Olympics, just the incredible feeling of it all. So I really do think that music and the sports go so well together.
I love you, baby, and if it's quite all right, I need you, baby, to warm the lonely nights. I love you, baby. Trust in me when I say, oh, pretty baby, don't breathe.
I was curious to find out if she thought whether there were any things in common between musicians and sports people.
Well, you've got to be self-motivated. You know, if you don't get yourself up in the morning and train, if you don't get up and practice your instrument, there's no one else who can do it for you. It's very self-motivated. And it's also a long-term thing. Most people who are excelling in their field, whether it be music or sport, tend to start from a very early age and put in a hell of a lot of time and a hell of a lot of effort and a lot of mental power, because it takes your brain to actually do all this stuff.
King Cricket, King Cricket, Carfield Sobers is his name. King Cricket, King Cricket, Sobers is his name.
The guitarist Dominic Grant is the son of the late Cy Grant, the Guyanese polymath, actor, musician, writer, poet and broadcaster, who died in 2010 at the age of 90. Dominic Grant himself has his own sporting connections. He plays a lot of tennis. In fact, he sees a strong affinity of guitar players with tennis and feels in good company, because guitar gods Jim Hall and Paco de Lucia were both, he told me, tennis obsessives. I also asked Dominic Grant about the cricketing calypsos which his dad used to write for British television, such as King Cricket, dedicated to Garfield Sobers, who was the captain of the all-conquering West Indies teams of the 60s, and The Constantine Calypso, which tells the story of the dignified Leary Constantine, who became a politician and was appointed a peer and did important work in race relations.
West Indies field 15 men, the king of the game, Garfield Sobers is his name, for cricket and West Indies. Long may he reign. King Cricket, King Cricket, Garfield Sobers is his name. King Cricket, King Cricket, Sobers is his name.
According to Dominic Grant, his father wasn't crazy about calypsos. They were written because he got the commission to do them. But it has to be said that both of these songs make the incredible dignity and greatness of Sobers and of Constantine stand out. The songs really tell the story of their achievements, both on and off the pitch. Moving on, I also spoke to a British-born jazz bassist who had a different role in cricket. He once played it professionally. Before he moved to America as a musician, Orlando Le Fleming, he now lives in Brooklyn, was under contract to Somerset and also played minor counties cricket for Devon. When he got to New York, he had quite a few years playing in Jane Monheit's band, and he has a successful trio, the Owl Trio, with fellow Brit New Yorker Will Vinson and the Norwegian guitarist Lager Lundt. Orlando is about to put out the second album in his own name, entitled Romantic Funk. I asked Orlando Le Fleming, on a crack league phone line from New York, if things that he had learnt playing competitive sport had helped him in the music business.
That sporting pressure, you know, did help me with the music. Dealing with high-pressure situations and guys who are basically bullying you a bit, you know, on stage, you know, and learning how to handle it, be thick-skinned.
Another bassist who also has a journey from sport into music and who is of similar age, just 2.5 years younger than Orlando Le Fleming, is Michael Janish. There isn't actually a cricket connection here. I just like the idea of them as some kind of doppelgangers who started off in sport on opposite sides of the Atlantic and ended up travelling across it, and once they'd got to the other side, each settled and developed a substantial career in music. Le Fleming's life as a young man went west, to Brooklyn. Michael Janish's went east, to Surrey. Michael Janish was a running back in American football, and he was on a full sports scholarship at an American university, and he was also a 400-metre runner. I interviewed him a few years ago, and he told me that his sporting career had ended, and very suddenly. He told me that in a practice session, A 340-pound defensive tackle had landed with his knee on Janish's hamstring and had ripped it apart. Janish remembered the pain. For 3 months he couldn't walk and there was bruising, and the university withdrew his sports scholarship. Ever since I've known Michael Janish, that story has stayed with me and must go some way to explaining his level of drive, energy, stamina and his work rate. Michael Janish runs the record label Whirlwind Recordings, and he has his own second album out in October. What you're hearing is a preview of one particularly busy track called Chakaraka. It features Colin Stranahan on drums and Jason Palmer on trumpet, and to me at least, it has the focus and the energy of the team locker room running right through it. This story about jazz and sport could have gone, in fact it could still go a lot further. I've had some very helpful conversations with composer and band leader John Altman, whose father and uncle were both big band players and serious club cricketers too. John knows everybody in music and in cricket. And then there's the story of Doug Insole, former chair of the Cricket Selectors for England, who has been responsible for getting a lot of cricketers interested in jazz. Insole was a school classmate of a central figure in British jazz, John Dankworth, in Walthamstow. But this feature is running out of time, and a good place to end is with jazz musicians marking one of the great moments, one of the absolute high points of cricket, when the spin bowler Jim Laker virtually beat the Australians single-handed at the Old Trafford Ashes Test in 1956. What Laker achieved was to take 19 of the Australians' 20 wickets. It was an incredible feat, and his record stands to this day. In fact, it will probably never be beaten. The tune is just a B-flat blues, and they called it Laker's Day. It has saxophonists Tubby Hayes, Ronnie Scott, and Harry Klein in exuberant mode. Listen out for the end. There's a moment when the whole band imagine themselves as a group of fielders watching on, and they're appealing to the umpire as Laker takes yet another Australian wicket. They all shout, "How's that?"
Laker's Day from the Tony Crombie Quintet featuring Tubby Hayes, Ronnie Scott and Harry Klein, rounding off that report from Sebastian Scottney. We're coming up next tonight, our concert set recorded at the 2015 Glasgow Jazz Festival featuring alto saxophonist and composer Rachel Cohen. Originally hailing from the Shetland Islands, Rachel won a scholarship to enrol in jazz studies at the Birmingham Conservatoire, and then she immersed herself in the Birmingham jazz scene. In 2012, she made the bold career move to London, and since then, she's been signed to the Whirlwind Recordings label and has received much critical acclaim for her beautifully lyrical and controlled playing style. Well, I'm still joined by Kevin Najoma. Kevin, you were at the gig. Paint a picture of the concert at the festival.
It took place at the Rio, which is a lovely little pop-up basement club right in the heart of the Merchant City, and it was a full day of music. We recorded four other bands, which climaxed with the James Taylor Quartet, did a storming set. We had this lovely collaboration between pianist Zoe Rahman and saxophonist Laura McDonald. We had the very, very upbeat and very funny, very engaging Swiss trio Vane. And then, yeah, they were great. Such humour and real inventive playing in the music. And we also had a really exciting BBC introducing band called Trio HSK. So it was a real feast of music. Mm. And Rachel played a lovely set, as you say, very lyrical. You can hear the influence of Lee Konitz. Really, really precise, lovely interplay within the group, but very mature as well.
So, yeah,
very impressive.
I thought she sounded great. Well, Kevin, I know you also interviewed Rachel while you were in Glasgow, so before we hear her performing, let's have a listen to that interview. And you start by asking her how long her band has been together.
Well, I've been playing with these guys since I moved to London. I moved to London about 2.5 years ago. And I met Bruno Heinen there, the pianist, Mark Lewandowski, the bass player there. Doug Huff, actually, I've known since Birmingham. We were both at the Birmingham Conservatoire. So I know them coming from different areas. The specific band tonight, anyway, isn't actually my usual lineup. I usually have Phil Robson on guitar, you know, the album band. But these guys are absolutely fantastic to play with, you know.
How long does it take to feel comfortable with musicians and think, right, okay, these are the ones who are going to work in a group with me?
It varies, actually. Sometimes you can play once or twice with people and you know there's the chemistry there, there's the, you know, there's potential for a lot, you know, but sometimes you have to work with people for quite a while, you know, and it can be worth it as well, you know, so everybody's different, but with these guys it happens near on straight away, I think, vibe-wise. You know, we got on playing-wise, you know, pretty much straight away, I think.
And the quartet is one of the classic lineups in jazz. If you think of all the groups who've played in quartets, all the great band leaders who've had quartets over the years, what do you like about the format?
It gives you a lot of support, you know, when you play in a quartet. Whether it's piano or guitar, actually, I mean, piano in this circumstance, for these gigs, you know, there's a huge amount of harmonic support there, and what that gives you is lots of different ideas for your own harmonic kind of contribution, you know, and it gives you a lot of scope and a lot of options for playing, you know.
So your background is unusual, to say the least. You're one of the few jazz musicians that I know who come from the Shetland Islands. Tell me how you discovered the music over there.
Well, I've been playing piano since I was really young, but I picked up the saxophone when I was about 9. I had the option of the saxophone or the violin, and I made the obvious choice in my eyes anyway, and I went for the saxophone. We were quite lucky in Shetland, actually. The music scene up there is actually a lot bigger than people think. The folk scene, anyway, is really big up there. But the jazz scene, we had a lot of visiting bands. So the Fife Youth Jazz Orchestra, for instance, came up to Shetland when I was really quite young, playing in my school jazz band. And that was a big thing, actually, for us. You know, we worked with them and workshops and rehearsals and things. And from then, just getting introduced, just little things, people giving you a different record to listen to, or people giving you, you know, and also the instrument that I played lends itself naturally anyway, no matter where you are, there's always going to be that connection to jazz when you play the saxophone, there's always going to be that thing there, so it's always, you're always going to have to check it out at some point, you know, so I think that's where it started.
Fantastic. It's great to hear you playing here, and we look forward to the next new music that you bring to us as well. Rachel, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Great to hear those insights from today's featured artists, Rachel Cohen. And Kevin, thanks for that interview, and thanks for sticking around.
My pleasure.
Well, let's enjoy the performance now, recorded on Saturday, June the 27th, on the Jazz Lineup stage at the Rio Pop-Up Club as part of the 2015 Glasgow Jazz Festival. The lineup features Mark Lewandowski on double bass, Bruno Heinen on piano and Doug Hoff on the drums, and Rachel Cohen on alto sax. Here's Rachel opening with her own composition, The Manor. Thank you. Ending tonight's concert set, that was Green, featuring Rachel Cohen on alto sax, Mark Lewandowski on double bass, Bruno Heinen on piano and Doug Hoff on the drums. Recorded on Saturday, June the 27th at the Jazz Lineup stage at the 2015 Glasgow Jazz Festival. And staying with the Jazz Festival theme, saxophonist Brandon Allen has curated the 2015 Highgate Jazz with Soul Festival, and it's coming up soon on the jazz calendar. It runs from August the 29th to the 31st at a series of venues around the Highgate area in London. And this year you can see Partisans, Gilad Atzmon's Orient House Ensemble, vocalist Charlie Wood and many more top UK jazz acts, as well as take part in masterclasses with pianist Jason Ribello and Brandon himself. For more information on that three-day festival, go to the Jazz Lineup link via the Radio 3 webpage. Well, time's almost up, but on next week's programme you can hear a special Jazz Lineup recording featuring saxophonist Trish Clues and vocalist Norma Winston. And on this week's Jazz on 3, Jez Nelson presents a special live edition of Jazz on 3 from the 2015 Edinburgh Festivals, featuring bassist Andy Champion, who performs with his prog jazz outfit called ACV, Reed's player Fraser Fifield and his trio, plus Edinburgh improvisers Emma Smith on bass and Lauren Sarah Hayes on electronics, and Herschel 36 featuring drummer Stu Brown. But let's go out now on a romantic note with something from pianist Alex Hutton's Magna Carta Suite, which is out on Fire Records. Inspired by the woodlands where he enjoys his daily dog walks and where the Magna Carta was indeed signed, let's hear Alex on the piano with bass player Yuri Gulabev and drummer Asif Circus with Self-Made Man. Till next time, from me, Claire Martin, bye-bye. Thank you.
that was Self-Made Man by the Alex Hutton Trio, ending this week's jazz lineup. The programme was produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade and presented by Claire Martin. If you'd like more information on Jazz Lineup, just go to the programme page via the Radio 3 website. And Jazz Lineup will be back next Saturday at 6 o'clock.